Netcasts you love.
From people you trust.
This is TWiT.
Bandwidth for Roz Rose the Pacific is brought to you by CacheFly. CacheFly.com.
This is Roz Rose with the amazing Roz Savage and Dr. Kiki, episode 66 for Sunday, May 23rd, 2010. It is what it is. Hi, everyone. Welcome to Roz Rose, episode 66. It is what it is. And I am Dr. Kiki. I'm here holding down the fort on dry land, waiting for Roz Savage. She usually calls in about 5 p.m. Pacific time from wherever she is in the Pacific. And she has been all over the place the last week. Since we talked with her last week, it has been an adventure. If you've been looking at her blog, if you've been keeping up with her tweets, Roz has been up to some challenges. She is challenged. She is working her way to get where she can. She thought things were going to go quickly at the end of last week. You know, she was looking at potentially moving, being done, hitting dry land very soon. And I do believe that she's on the line right now. Roz?
I am indeed. Hi, Kiki. How are you?
I'm fabulous. How are you doing?
Not bad. Not bad.
Tell me, give us the update.
It's sultry out here today. I'm making slow progress these days, but any progress west is good. I'm now in the Solomon Sea.
Right.
The conditions have been a bit weird since I got here. I suppose it was just about a week ago, because I had to break off early from last week's podcast, didn't I?
Yeah, you did.
About to run into the headlands, and that was pretty much the entrance to the Solomon Sea.
Wow.
Later on that day, I had a bit of an encounter with a local fisherman, which was interesting.
With some fishermen. Yeah, I read on your blog. What ended up happening?
We communicated about as much as we could. Gib didn't speak any English, and I didn't speak any whatever they speak. So I tried to show them on my chart where I'd come from and where I was going to. But they didn't. I'm not sure that the chart was really the right scale for them to sort of understand it very clearly.
Yeah.
But anyway, I gave them each a larabar. I thought, the international language of food. I offered them a snack each, and they seemed grateful for that. So we kind of communicated as much as was possible without language, I think. It was just strange to see human beings, and especially such very different, they're out there in their little dugout canoes, and they're fishing using just nylon line and lumps of coral as weights.
Wow.
I would say they were all quite into chewing betel nut, because they all had the really red teeth.
Yeah,
which looks a little bit alarming, but they seemed friendly enough. But they were certainly very different from the last people that I'd seen. But that was quite cool. But since then, it's been I could say it's a frustrating time, except I don't really allow myself to get frustrated by these things anymore. And it's only frustrating if I get frustrated by it. There's been a lot of, as Leo would say, backwards progress recently.
Yeah, I'm just bringing up your map right now on the Roz tracker so that our audience can take a look at where you've been. And what has happened with this backwards progress since last week?
Well, it's difficult to describe the conditions here. They're just constantly changing. Winds and currents have been coming at me, especially the winds, from all points of the compass. So I'm generally trying to head west, but it looks like I'm going to probably have to keep sidestepping various winds and currents. My weatherman sent me some very, very useful information about the weird currents that are operating in this part of the world.
Yeah, so
and
that's...
you can probably expect to see me go a lot further south before I manage to get any further west.
Okay, will that put you, or do you think it's going to put you down around the south end of Papua New Guinea? I mean, there's an archipelago. There's a long chain of islands off the southern tip of Papua New Guinea.
I could well end up in that part of the world, but once I get to that chain of islands, the currents should then start helping me. So they'll be then pushing me northwest towards Madang, which is where I'm actually hoping to end up. So I might well end up going about that far south.
Okay.
I'm at nearly 8 degrees south now, and could well go further south and then have to come back up a long way north to actually get to Madang. But so it's going to look a bit like a big hairpin. I'll probably go a long way south, but then that will put me into more favourable currents, so I'll get pushed north again.
Right.
So in the meantime, I just keep plugging away and making as much west as I can. But I'm more keen than ever to get to Madang now, because various people have been writing in, friends of mine, and also just contacts via my blog have been writing in and introducing me and my shore manager, also known as my mother, to various people in Madang. So we've actually now got some really cool stuff sorted out there.
Oh, good.
And I'm really keen to meet all these people because they sound very enthusiastic.
Well, that was something that was a concern of yours. I mean, it was going to be kind of anticlimactic to come all that way and for it to end very suddenly, sooner than you expected, and not have any plans for your arrival in place. So this is fantastic that your community is coming together and will give you a real hello when you arrive.
Absolutely, yeah, it's amazing the power of the internet. Yes, I was really quite sad for a little while there when it became obvious that none of my friends were going to be able to come out to just to celebrate with me. And I thought, oh, you know, to go all that way, it's been a 4-year project now, and then just kind of putter up to the jetty and go, oh, hello, yes, I just rowed across the Pacific. I'll just go and buy myself a drink then. You know, I thought it could all be a bit pathetic.
Yeah.
But now it looks like there should be quite a welcoming committee. All dependent, of course, on me actually managing to make it to Madang. But according to Lee, my weatherman, even if I did nothing else, even if I didn't row and just went with the elements, I probably would still more or less make it there. So hopefully. But we have absolutely no idea when this might be.
It's still up in the air as to how long it might take you to do your hairpin. Yeah. What was that?
Yes. It's wide open, yes. Depending on whether it turns out to be a little hairpin or a big hairpin.
What would you prefer? What are you hoping for?
Well, it's interesting because I think any other row that I've ever done, I would immediately have said, oh, please, a small hairpin. I just can't wait to get back to dry land. But I'm actually... I'm okay with it out here. I've been out here for just over a month now. And I think a month would definitely have been too short. But apart from anything else, I was confident I was going to lose 30 pounds out here.
Looking forward to it.
I've only lost about 10 so far. So I've got no more weight still to lose. So I've got to do a lot more rowing and work it all off. And also, of course, it's nice to be able to blog while I'm out here and to have the audience, and they seem to find it more interesting while I'm on the boat than when I'm on dry land. And I'm really quite, you know, I've got lots of books that I still want to listen to. So I'm fairly philosophical. I don't really mind either way. I'm rowing hard, you know, I'm trying to get there within reasonable time. I suppose my absolute optimum would be about a month from now. It would be just great.
Well, we'll see how long it actually ends up taking. I know people within your community, there's a contest going on, isn't there? People are voting and are betting on when you will arrive.
That's right. I'm not sure if that contest is still open, because when we thought I was going to be there potentially within the next couple of weeks, we thought, oh, we'd better close the contest.
Right.
So I'm not sure if it's still open. But yes, certainly people have been betting on a kind of sweepstake on, I think, down to the second of when I'm going to arrive. And at this stage, I would say their guess is probably as good as mine, because I haven't got a clue.
How does that feel? Just being, you know, you're rowing and you're working as hard as you can to make progress, and to work against the changing currents and you know, use whatever you can to your advantage, but still at the same time, just not really having an idea how long it's going to be. How does that feel?
Well, at the moment, I'm fairly relaxed about it because I've still got plenty of food. I've got my water maker working again, which I was very proud of.
Yay!
Fresh
water, yay!
Oh, I'm so happy about that. It's just when it's not working, it's just constantly there as a niggling worry at the back of your mind, just wondering if you're going to run out of water. And also it means that you can't just make free with fresh water to bathe and stay clean and nice. So I'm so happy to have the water maker working. So there's no real kind of pressure of time, and I really am just taking it one day at a time. And even when I get blown backwards, the ocean has really battered this out of me, because I'm not naturally a patient person. And over the years that I've been rowing oceans, I've so many times made this mistake of extrapolating from where I am now. And if I carry on at this rate, I'll be there in 2 weeks. Or if I carry on at this rate, I will never get there before I'm 100 years old.
Right.
And finally, I seem to have reached that stage of just going, well, I'll just get there when I get there. And, there are pluses and minuses of early arrival, late arrival. I think I've learned that the ocean has got its own schedule, and I can try fighting it, but it's actually just a shortcut to insanity to do that.
Yeah.
Go with the flow and try and focus on the positive aspects of being out here for however long.
Yeah.
But I have to say, I'm not that enamoured of the Solomon Sea, so it's not dirty.
No, you're not enamored of it?
Seeing a lot of plastic out here, which is quite sad, really. Oh, and Mum was telling me this morning that oil spill in Mexico that you were the first to tell me about, she said that's turning into one of the worst ecological disasters ever.
And I actually wanted to bring that up with you today. Some of the information that's come out, NPR reported last week that the rate of the flow out of the break in the pipe is much, much faster and bigger than was what they first estimated. And so it looks as though it might be the equivalent of an Exxon Valdez every 3 to 4 days.
Oh, my God.
Yeah.
Oh, that's terrible.
Yeah, it's probably...
I was especially sad when Mum said that the turtles and the whale sharks were being especially impacted because it's their breeding season at the moment.
Yeah.
And those are two of my favourite creatures, so I was terribly sad to hear that.
Yeah, it really is. It's turning into... I mean, this is going to be a... you know, hopefully a learning event for a lot of people, but it is turning into one of the biggest environmental disaster, like on the water, I believe. Maybe not on the land. I don't know how it measures up against other disasters. Do you just thinking about things that we've done to the planet that have turned into, that have been disasters that we've learned lessons from, do any pop to your mind?
Oh, that's a really good question. Because so many of the the bad things have been not the big dramatic things like Chernobyl or this.
Mm-hmm.
So many of the worst things have been just the accumulation of millions and billions of tiny little things. And even so many of those have not been obviously disastrous. Like when they invented plastic, I'm sure they went, wow, look at this really cool stuff and all these amazing things you can do with it. And it's true. There are so many really cool things that you can do with plastic, things that we just wouldn't have been able to invent without plastic. So plastic is not in itself an evil thing. And
no.
Likewise, genetically modified organisms, there are many benefits to those. And so you can't just say uniformly, what is it?
Right.
But the trouble is that we often unleash things without really knowing what we're doing.
Yeah,
what the long-term implications are going to be.
Yeah, there's a certain amount of knowledge in what you're doing and what the downstream effects are going to be. I mean, we have so many times we think that we can use biological controls to maybe control animal pest populations, and then you find that the control species will then go crazy and take over.
Yeah.
A habitat and do more damage than the original pest in the first place. And, you know, you thought it was just a very simple predator-prey relationship, but no, there was much more involved that you had that there was no knowledge of. And so there are things that need to be looked at and considered that maybe we don't even know to consider them before getting into the situation.
Yeah, but we're at this really interesting stage now, aren't we? Because even if there are so many genies that we can't put back in the bottle, so many things that are just done and can't be fixed or can't be undone. So you kind of, well, should we carry on? Should we carry on just innovating and putting things out there and hoping that eventually natural selection will figure out a way to deal with any of these man-made problems that we've created. It's so complex. I mean, obviously we can't put the Earth back to its pristine state now.
Yeah, right.
It's just, it's not possible, or not
right.
Within any realistic timescale.
Right.
And looking at the new things that we're inventing, what's a kind of feasible controlled experiment to see if something is going to turn out to be a good thing or a bad thing? Do you put it out there for 10 years and if nothing bad happens, you go, oh, well, it's okay, we can really go for it now. Let's put it on general release and available to all. But plastic only became a problem when we started using it in such humongous quantities and for all the wrong purposes, using it for disposable items rather than things with long lives. So it's almost like we need a special environmental court. There's a trilogy of books I really like to recommend that is relevant. It's the Mars Trilogy by Kim Stanley Robinson.
I love that trilogy. I read it several years ago, and it's a fabulous, fabulous series of books.
It is mind-expanding stuff, isn't
yeah.
it?
Yeah.
It just touches on so many things. But it's fascinating looking at the terraforming of Mars. And there are so many parallels between what his fictional characters do there and what we've actually been doing on Earth. And it's actually quite almost frightening for me sometimes listening to that out here because there are times when I'm more present on Mars than I am on my rowboat.
That's funny. That's funny.
Because I don't have any reality checks out here to remind me that I am on planet Earth and that I'm not an immortal living on Mars.
Right. Except for the occasional fisherman with betel nut stained teeth.
Yeah. Yes, exactly.
Yeah, there's some interesting... I was just going to say, there's some really interesting ideas, like you said, similar to what we're talking about doing and what we are doing here on Earth, that were actually brought up in the Mars Trilogy, the major ideas of geoengineering, biological engineering, creating bacteria that can survive on Mars, that will then create, put more oxygen in the atmosphere, that then you can put a more complex life form like a fungus, and then, you know, more oxygen from that, and then finally you'll have plants that will go in, and eventually you have enough oxygen in the atmosphere that you can put humans there, and then when humans are there, then you can start, then there are the space elevator and the ideas of just so many different ideas in terms of what you can engineer on a planet to potentially facilitate humanity.
Yeah, it's really interesting that one of the things they have the most difficulty with is just creating soil, dirt, earth.
Yeah.
Because it's such an amazingly complex thing and takes so long to develop, and it's the thing that we probably take the most for granted. And yet, it's one of their biggest challenges. It's also quite alarming just seeing in that book how they imagine Earth developing over the next 100 years or so, and the population crisis, as in overpopulation crisis.
Right. Yeah.
That's frighteningly realistic.
It is realistic. The population issue is one that I find interesting, because with advancing technology and the ability to increase, our farming and agriculture to be able to feed people, if we can actually feed people and get them water, access to water and shelter, then the population can grow unchecked. But it's when the resources start to be impinged that you start to have issues with natural population control, where the populations don't grow as a result of the limited resources, or they also don't grow because of limited space. They don't grow. What was another reason? There are suggestions in the scientific literature that's come out over the last few years that there are possibly natural population controls just built into our biology, that as we reach a certain point that reproductive ability declines, and that so there are fewer children born. I don't know, just all sorts of really interesting ideas that are coming out. But with technology advancing, it could potentially outweigh the natural biological controls that keep everything stable. Did I lose Roz? I think I lost Roz for a moment. Hopefully she will call back. You are back.
Hello, I'm sorry. I lost the satellite signal there.
I'm glad you're back.
Yes, I'm back. there is a question there, though, isn't there? That even though we can carry on growing the population, whether we actually want to,
mm-hmm.
how many people we want to have on Earth before it starts becoming just unpleasantly overcrowded.
Right.
Even if enough resources, I suppose there might be an optimum level of population that's lower than what the planet can actually support. But yeah. If we were able to determine that number, then how do you actually enforce it?
Right.
That's the political and religious and ethical hot potato, isn't it?
It is. It definitely is. I mean, I think what's funny sometimes, maybe we just need to educate people, because it seems that the more educated populations become, the lower their reproductive rate is. So
that's true, particularly educating women.
Exactly.
Yeah, or girls, I should say. Yeah.
And education is something that is, it doesn't step on anybody's human rights.
That's a really good point. And how can you go wrong by educating people more, giving them more options of what they can do with their lives? And also, hopefully, if we can carry on maintaining healthier conditions on the planet, then people don't feel like they need to have 10 children in the hope that a couple might survive.
Right. Yeah, you don't just have the scattershot of just hoping, right?
Yeah, wow, we're addressing some big questions here.
I know, big contemplative issues. There was somebody in the chat room earlier was wondering if you're going to write a book on philosophy when you do your Indian Ocean row.
Wow. Well, it's funny that they mentioned that, particularly in association with the Indian Ocean, because, I had that thought just the other day. I would like to write a more environmental book based on my Pacific row. But then I thought maybe a more philosophical/spiritual book based on the Indian Ocean row would be quite appropriate. So I hope so. I would love to. I'm always coming up with ideas for things I'd like to do, and I just don't have enough, hours in the day or years in my life. But that is something that I would like to make time for, because it feels like all these things are converging. Philosophy and science and environment and ethics. That for a while there, it looked like so many of these things were heading in different directions. But a lot of them seem to be, maybe they did go in different directions, but now they're kind of meeting up around the back. You know what I mean? They've kind of gone full circle, and they're linking up again. And so when you get into things like quantum mechanics, it gets into the whole sphere of consciousness and weird, mind-blowing stuff like that. So I don't know if I'm qualified to really write a book on philosophy. It's not something that I've studied at all. But I suppose in my own homespun way, it is something that I've spent quite a bit of time thinking about, especially during these times out on the ocean. So yes, yeah. That's something that I would love to do. I'm hoping that over the coming months between now and hopefully setting out on the Indian Ocean next year, I'm hoping to do a lot more speaking engagements as well. And it would be really great to get feedback from people on what aspects of what I do it is that most fascinates them. So I love doing speaking engagements because it's such an opportunity to get feedback and to get questions and just to meet people. So maybe I can put the word out to the podcast audience that if anybody would like me to come and speak at their club or in their town or at some sports event or whatever, then if they could get in touch with me via the contact form on my website. I am entertaining all offers at the moment, and this is largely the way that I hope to raise the funds for my Indian Ocean row.
I think that sounds like a great idea. So hopefully people will contact you. Maybe you can do something like singer Jonathan Colton did, where if he gets enough people inviting him to a city, he has a threshold. If he gets enough people inviting him, he has to go.
Yeah. Well, I suppose I've been doing that sort of informally for a while now, because I try and keep my travel to a minimum for financial and environmental costs. So I tend to stack up a number of reasons to go to a particular place, and then it just takes like the final one and I go, right, okay, I'm now going there. So I would love to do just a speaking tour all around North America, and hopefully we could make it, we'd come up with some sort of a plan to profit share or something like that, so as I get some funds towards my Indian Ocean row, but it's also worthwhile for whoever has helped to coordinate it. So yes, please get in touch.
Fabulous.
No reasonable offers considered.
So I don't want to keep you too long. We've already been talking for close to a half an hour, and I know there's probably lots of sultry weathered rowing that you could be doing. We want you to stay in the boat this week.
Yes. Oh, I got a little. Well, my mum never really tells me off, but I could tell she was very unhappy about that. Despite the fact that she was typing up my account of it, it was obvious that I'd survived, or else I wouldn't have been able to write the account. But no, I was in a little bit of trouble with my mum. So that's not a good thing. So I will have to go over the side soon, barnacles, but I will be staying very, very close to the boat and hanging on the grab line at all times.
Good. Stay close to the boat, at least. And we're very glad that you are safe and sound for another week, and that you know, that we're able to talk with you again. And it's, you know, you're going through some amazing challenges, and I've been following your blog, and I'm just amazed at all that has happened in the past week. You know, the week previous was very kind of mellow and okay, not too much going on, and then it was like, and drama.
Yes, yeah, a little too much drama. I'm very relieved to have a boring mood. It would be quite nice to get back to making solid progress west, but I don't think that's going to happen anytime soon. So it's a bit of a magical mystery tour around the Solomon Sea now, and we'll see what happens. But I just really hope I do make it to Madang, because I now feel like I've got a new friends there waiting to greet me in. So fingers crossed that I make it there sometime. When I just want to make it there,
and we want you to make it there too. Absolutely, we're all rooting for you. So yeah, I hope
to talk with you. And is there anything that people can do?
You're breaking up a bit.
But you know the oil spill in the Gulf.
Yes.
Is there anything that people can do? Are they asking for volunteers to help with beach cleaning or anything like that?
I think they are asking for volunteers as the oil comes ashore more and more. There is I can't remember. As far as I know, the government and the oil companies are attempting to take care of things, and they're not. There are people volunteering, and there are people getting down there. And I think one of the big things that needs to be done right now is for the citizen journalism to really keep track of what's happening, and to make sure that the proper things happen to mitigate the damage.
Yes. Terrible business. Well, keep me posted.
I will.
Yeah. Okay, well, have a great week, and same time, similar place next week.
Same time, similar place, a very similar place, but hopefully you'll have made a lot more progress, and there will be more stories from you. And I think, what are we doing next week? Next week, I had something on the schedule for next week. I can't recall exactly what it is. I don't have it on the schedule. I haven't written it down.
I hope Gabby wasn't too offended last week that I had to dash off, but I really was getting rather worried because those cliffs were getting closer and closer while we were talking. So
yeah.
I really was starting to feel a little bit unmellow. So I hope she didn't take it personally.
Yeah, she did not take it personally at all. She understood completely. She was just sorry that she didn't get a better chance to talk with you more. She was very interested in what you were doing. So,
some other time, hopefully.
Yes, hopefully some other time. I'll see if I can set that up. So next week, same time.
I know it's going to be next week, but somebody else interesting is going to be on the phone next week.
Somebody else interesting will be on the phone. Exactly. We'll have another guest next week.
Looking forward to it. Okay, I will speak to you then.
Have a wonderful, row. You take care too. Be careful.
I will. I promise. Thanks a lot.
You're welcome.
All the best. Bye.
Bye, Roz.
Bye.
And that's Roz Savage, folks. She is attempting to be the first woman to row single-handedly across the Pacific Ocean. She is well into leg three of her three-leg journey. She has been out on the ocean for over a month now, about a month now. She's in the Solomon Ocean, moved from the Pacific to the Solomon Seas. And she is on her way to Madang. And hopefully she will make it in, she said, a month. Maybe it'll be a couple of weeks. As long as she keeps rowing, we will keep doing this podcast and we will keep updating you on her progress. We will let Roz tell you personally what she's doing, because that's what's great about what we're doing here, the use of technology to be able to connect you even that much closer to this woman who's alone on the ocean and attempting something that very few people have attempted before her. And that's it for this week. I am Dr. Kiki. I'll be back hosting yet again next week for Roz Rose, Roz Rose the Pacific. And I, like I said, I don't know exactly what is on next week's schedule. I forgot to write it down. Sorry, guys. But I do believe it'll be something interesting, and we will be talking about something scientifically related to the state of the oceans today. In the meantime, you can follow Roz online at rozsavage.com, and her Twitter account as well is rozsavage. And you can download Roz Rose past episodes at twit.tv/Roz. And I guess there's Eco Heroes on her website, Roz Savage. I'm trying to think if there's anything else she's trying to get you to do right away, but I don't believe there is. Check out ecoheroes.com. Eco Heroes is one of her endeavors to get people to be a little bit more environmentally conscious. And I'll be back here next week, 5 p.m. Pacific time. And as long as Roz is rowing, like I said, we'll be here. Where will Roz be? We won't know, but you will be among the first to know by coming back. So until then, keep rowing.